Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Talking Transfers from the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by 90 Min's transfer correspondent, Graham Bailey. And 90 Min's Spurs man, Sean Walsh, is back on the podcast, fresh off the back of a late finish at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Monday night in possibly one of the maddest games of football I've seen in how long, Sean? Premier League history?
I think it's certainly the maddest that I've attended. There was just so much going on. Like, I think you could probably split that match up into 8 or 9 different acts of different things that were going on. My personal favourite was the period from 60 to 70 minutes where Spurs were playing like the super aggressive high line. Like, you know, on FIFA where you just spam the offside trap button and it just everyone just moved up the pitch and it was like that. And it was just a marvel to watch. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing before my eyes. But fairly hard coming away from a 4-1 defeat to Chelsea at the hands of Pochettino. I couldn't imagine that pretty much, but
we live where we funny live. Way the world works, isn't it?
It's really so strange, isn't it? I'm just completely... I don't know what the season's going to bring. Anything can happen. And the Spurs nearly nicked a draw at the end as well, so those are the sliding doors moments.
Nearly. Chelsea could have also scored 10 for me, Graham. Okay. Graham, what did you make of it?
Yeah, it was fascinating, I think, that... You know, I think that Ange played up to the audience a little bit. I think he did what the fans wanted, where I think he should have gone for the point. And I think if he had, he'd have got it. You know, to allow Nicholas Jackson to score a hat-trick, I think that way he blazed it over the bar for his potential fault, I think that summed up Nicholas Jackson more than his hat-trick. that was the real Nicholas Jackson. This is a balmy Premier League season. You know, the season where we've seen Eddie Nketiah and Nicholas Jackson, probably two of the worst strikers to claim Premier League hat-tricks in Premier League history. It's amazing stuff. But yeah, I think that Ange, will he learn from that? I think he likes the adulation. I think he likes Ange Ball. I think he... You know, I think the Spurs fans, in a strange way, were happier with that than playing out for a 0-0, 1-1. I think they were happier with that.
Is that the case, Sean?
Yeah. We were arguing about it off air. I don't think that if Spurs defend deep, I know Chelsea had this problem breaking down deep blocks, but I don't think Spurs could have played a coherent deep block with the personnel they had on the pitch. It kind of had to be squeeze some life out of it and hope that the chaos kind of falls back your way. Because that was the whole thing of the first half, that Chelsea managed to weather an early storm and eventually the chaos went their way. And I think that's the whole thing that Spurs were just hoping for. Put all of these ingredients in this pot and hopefully something mad happens. Like if Son finds the bottom corner with a last chance with Sanchez, if Dier is a fraction onside rather than offside with that volley he had, which is never seen anything like that from him. Goodness me. These are the fine margins. Just a football was a crazy game. And I think Postecoglou will probably stress it later that, you know, this is still year one of the project. This is still only a few months in, that he wanted to see, okay, what can we do with the way that we do want to play rather than the way that we would have to play. Because I think this is something that happens like quite a lot. When Pochettino was here, he had the same kind of idealist philosophy, but it wasn't until late in his later years that he learned, okay, how can we play without the ball? How do we grow into that? Like, it is a long process to kind of get to that stage, so I'm still quite positive about it.
Well, Spurs wanting a new centre back is top of the bill on this show today, because Mickey van der Ven was running backwards and popped his hamstring, looked pretty bad, and you think that might rule him out for a few weeks at the very least. Obviously there's a transfer window coming up in just under 2 months' time. Will Tottenham dip back into that to sign a player or more? Spurs and Arsenal looking at some players from Salzburg. Chelsea, Conor Gallagher on the agenda as well. We have, as usual, a massive Man United section, because they are always somehow the story. Casemiro, Varane, Bruno Fernandes, Kobbie Mainoo, Todibo, City, and Florian Wirtz we'll talk about, and Real and Alphonso Davies as well on the agenda today. Subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and follow us on social media at @_ScottSaunders, at Graham Bailey, and at @SeanDZWalsh, at nightymin.com. At nightymin.com. What am I talking about? Nightymin.com for all the latest from us, nightymin.com/talkingtransfers for all the latest transfer news, and at @nightymin_football for the social channels for us as well. But let's revert back to Tottenham. Sean, it's fair to say, isn't it, that Spurs have done well this season, but their squad has been quite thin, and now it seems like all in the course of about half an hour, everything that you possibly could not have wanted to happen happened. James Maddison got injured. Mickey van der Ven pulled his hammy. Eric Dier played some minutes. And, you know, Spurs are looking at longer term, I suppose, bulking up their squad because the depth isn't really there. And we'll see that tested in the next few weeks. But they do want a centre-back, don't they?
They do, and I think it's going to become evident over the next few weeks why that is the case, because you're right, I think Spurs had quite a bit of injury luck so far this season. They were able to play their strongest 11 pretty much every week to this point. The Van der Ven hamstring pull was quite an aggressive one. I'll be really surprised if he's back for 2024. How does Spurs survive till then? I think they've got to play Eric Dier and, you know, hope for the best. But moving forward, yeah, they do want another centre-back. Lloyd Kelly, still the kind of prominent name in these conversations, who Spurs tried for at the end of the summer window, couldn't quite get over the line. His contract is up next summer. Spurs aren't alone in that race. Other names, Chelsea's Trevor Chalobah, who I actually quite like. I think I'd like him more than the other ones. I think that he's someone that's quite undervalued in this market right now, because I think ultimately he's played at the top level. And I don't think he's ever kind of, you know, like crapped his pants or anything, basically, or anything like that. He's been fine. He's been good at the top level. Tosin Adarabayo, still talked about as well at Fulham, not playing a lot there. And then the other one that Spurs have looked at was Uruguay's Sebastian Caceres, who's turning quite a few heads with his performances under Marcelo Bielsa.
Just let's touch on Cuti Romero a minute. Just going back to the game, obviously we talked about Spurs wanting a centre-back. I'm not saying that Spurs would ever look to replace him, but Sean, does there come a point where you're like, stop doing that, mate? Like,
we thought that he'd kind of, you know, turned a corner. We thought there was a lot of think pieces about, Van der Ven makes Romero calmer and all this other stuff. And I think for the most part, that has been true. But at the same time, it's like, I don't think you can take that kind of player out of him. And it does get annoying. It's like, could Romero win the league as your best centre-back? I don't know. But he did win the World Cup as Argentina's best centre-back. So that you can always kind of hang your hand on that. But you're right, it gets a bit frustrating. But I think you've got to take the good with the bad. I say a lot on our Spurs pod or Whatnight podcast. I do think Romero has been quite underrated so far this season, that he has done a lot of good. That kind of gets overshadowed because he moves in a way I describe him like a caveman, and I think that extends to his tackling as well. But because people have this perception in their heads what he is like, they kind of overlook the good stuff that he does. But yeah, it's not a time to talk about that after he's been sent off 30 minutes into a London derby.
Yeah, Graham, any more to add there on Tottenham's plans for, you know, the future months? We'll talk about the Salzburg players in a minute, but anything to add at centre half?
In terms of January, the message coming from Tottenham, even before the Romero incident and Van der Ven, was always a centre back. They wanted to come in, maybe another forward, and then the midfield. Because I came in when I was asking the questions, when I was meeting someone at Tottenham, I thought midfield would be something really high up, but it's seemingly maybe a one in, one out. If Højbjerg left, maybe someone. I think they may have been thinking midfield something for the summer. Obviously, they have both Sarr and Bissouma missing the AFCON. It's interesting. Well, I don't know what Sean thinks. Does he see is Skip obviously going to step in along with Højbjerg? Is there another one in there that I'm missing? Possibly.
Bentancur's back now.
Yeah. So you've got them three. So you can see why they are thinking. Yeah, unless they're allowed, and obviously Skip and Bentancur aren't going. So Højbjerg out possibly. You can see why they're thinking that, actually. So fair play to them. Yeah, a centre back. And it is a third choice centre back they're looking for. You know, they're not Van der Veen very happy with. Romero, yeah, still very happy with 25. Still arguably not at the peak of his powers yet, Romero. I still think he's a fabulous player. So you can see why they want that third centre half. And the problem they've got with Lloyd Kelly is apparently Bournemouth aren't willing to sell. So it wouldn't surprise me if they do move on to someone else. But you know, if someone knows a Premier League club in the market, there's a tax there to be paid for any Premier League club. So interesting. But I do think they'll bring a centre half in.
Harry Maguire's having a great time at the moment.
Can you imagine doing that high line last night?
Hey, go on. If you got your picky United defenders, you go and get Varane do your job for 6 months, Sean.
Well, if he could play more than one game the way in a row.
Yeah, it'll be fine. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see whatever new Spurs go down. But I think it will be a centre half. And then Højbjerg, the decision it made depends who comes in for Højbjerg. We saw it in the summer, you know, there was Fulham, Atletico Madrid. No one quite stepped up to the mark, but I think the Spurs would be willing to move him on if they got an acceptable offer.
Sean, talk to me about the Tottenham Arsenal. Not tug of war, really. I don't think it's at that stage yet, but there's some Salzburg players. This is the place now to buy, you know, young up and coming players. We've seen a ton of them in the recent past. Who are next on the agenda? Who are the next big names? If you play Football Manager, you probably know them. That's out now. But yes, indeed, there's three on the list that I have, but Sean, I'll let you take it.
Yes, so first up, Lucas Gourcuff-Duath, who I believe he was up for. I believe he was up for the Golden Boy Award. I remember thinking about did the rankings, and I think he was up for that. Very good technical midfielder. Oscar Gluck as well, who is an Israel international, teammates with Manuel Solomon. I have been kind of dazzled by some of his performances in.
Nearly signed for them in the summer.
I think so. Yeah, I think
he was linked. Right. He linked to the Premier League. Yeah, but
he was. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, he's looked. Actually, he's kind of someone that pops off the screen. Like you could sit someone down who doesn't know a lot about football, but they would watch and they'd be like, oh, that Oscar Gluck guy seems like one of the best players on the pitch, right? But that's the kind of player that he is. And then Kareem Konate as well. But as you were saying, Scott, I think this isn't a secret that Salzburg are this talent factory. Arsenal and Spurs watched Salzburg win 2-0 at the weekend. Konate scored both the goals. This is how the smart clubs operate now. And I think Arsenal and Spurs are starting to become two of the savvier clubs in the market. I think both clubs have had a lot of hits recently, you know, Kai Havertz withstanding, but
how much is number forward, Scott? Sean, number forward for Spurs. How likely do you think that is? It might be a Richarlison out, then one in maybe, same as in midfield.
Yeah, it's probably a case of that. And I think Spurs do have a lot of belief now in Alejo Valise as well, who they brought in the summer. He's been kind of fast-tracked into plans already. I think ideally they would like someone who could play wide as well. That seems to be my inclination, but I think they do have a lot of faith in Brendan Johnson at the same time. I think they're just looking for more options that you can rotate. I think what the last few years have taught us is that the best teams like City and Liverpool, they have these so many different ways to hurt you. They can bring on so many different players. I think there was a game recently, I think it was Liverpool, and they ended up with like all five of their forwards on the pitch and they scored a goal late on or something. And you're just like, well, obviously it's going to happen. They've got all this quality. And I think now teams are starting to move in that direction with how many quality forwards can we really get on one team?
Graham, is this a case now with the interest from these two Premier League clubs and Salzburg players that clubs are trying to catch them when they're at Salzburg before they join Leipzig?
Very much so, you know, they're learning the lesson, aren't they? You know, before they head to Dortmund or something, you're better off buying them.
Well, Haaland's the classic case, right? You know, Dortmund picked up Haaland, and then Dortmund like only got 60-odd million for him, transfer fee, right? But, you know, they could have bought him for 20.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, though, but Salzburg are buying and spending money on these players. I think it's going to do, sorry, pronunciation. He was an Austrian record, I think 15 million he cost. So again, you're already talking. They're out laying money, Salzburg. So when they do spot these players, I think Saint Etienne, he came from. Talk about a factory. People need to start going to Saint Etienne at source, don't they? Fofana, Saliba, and now him. I think he, of the three we've talked about, I know Glauk and Konate get the headlines, but I think he's a really interesting one. You know, defensive midfielder, very much someone who would fit in at Tottenham and at Arsenal because they're looking for someone of that ilk. So I think he's an interesting one.
Just to touch on Arsenal briefly, we'll talk Chelsea in a second. Arsenal looking at defensive midfielders, Graham. We talked about Andre recently, played in the Copa Libertadores final. Just to round off on Arsenal there, why are they looking at a midfielder?
It seems to, even when Rice came in, I personally think it's because, you know, Thomas Partey they can't rely on. You know, I think if Partey was playing every game, and then they wouldn't have this conversation. I think Partey's one who, we know that Arsenal at the start of the summer said you can go, then they changed their mind. But with his injury record, it's not quite there. And the fact they've got to play Kai Havertz in midfield probably sums up why they need a midfielder. You know, Declan Rice, I was at Newcastle at the weekend, and he was fantastic, Declan Rice, for what he was able to do. But there was just no backup. Jorginho started well, but he's not quite there. I think there's, you do wonder why, you say it's got, why they need one. But when you watch them, you think, yeah, you really do need another one in there. As well as, actually, Arsenal, we think of Arsenal as a finished product stuff. And it, desperate for a striker. I think not desperate for a midfield, because if Partey was fit and Odegaard and Rice, that's a brilliant three. But Partey's not fit. So I think that's why they are. Indeed, and Andre is one who they're looking at, Scott, the Fluminense, not captain, but he's a Fluminense star player. He led them to Copa Libertadores glory. And they are still in for him, so I think. But they are looking around Europe now for these midfielders. There's plenty of them. So yeah, I think Arsenal might do business in January. But yeah, I think it's partly, mainly because it's Partey injury, Scott. They just can't rely on him. You know, they can't get more than a dozen games out of him a season. And he is good when he plays, but he's just not good enough. And is Jorginho or Havertz coming in good enough for Arsenal to win the league? I don't think so.
Obviously, Arsenal strikers is another topic for another day. Potentially goalkeepers as well, because we've obviously, since we last did a podcast, we had the fallout about the goal at Newcastle, this kind of thing.
Oh, we've got Sean on to talk about how bad David Raya is. Yeah.
Every day I log onto Twitter and it's a new Arsenal fan abusing me about what I've said about David Raya in the past.
He didn't cover himself in glory there, but
my rating of two sums it up. I think he got away with murder at the weekend.
He did,
as well.
Yeah, he's got massively
because
away
nobody was talking about him in the press conference. We're in afterwards. Obviously, Mikel Arteta came in, and it was like it was a great press conference. It was one of those. I was there for Rafa Benitez when he went on his. He came in, like, he started going off it, and everyone started looking around. Did he just say what we think he said there? And then he went, yeah, he did. Quick, it was.
And then they doubled down with a statement the next day. Let's actually do it in this direction. We'll come back to Chelsea. I do want to, but since this has been such a massive topic, and Graham was there, obviously, for the post match. Where do we sit on this? Like, well, I'm talking to a Tottenham fan here, but you know, where do we sit on this? Graham, I'll come to you first, because Arteta made a pointed statement. Disgrace was the word used, and then Arsenal doubled down on that with an unacceptable refereeing decisions statement, literally on their website statement and on social media. This is divided opinion, really, about the standard of refereeing, this kind of thing. Where do you sit on it?
I like Arsenal backing their man. I think I like Arteta coming out and saying that. I think he's embarrassing. If you're going to come out and slag it off, do a proper job of it. And he did. Yeah. There was no sitting on the fence there. There was no Eddie Howe, I haven't seen it, etc. with a little cheeky smile on his face. Oh, he must have seen the replays. I haven't seen it. Yeah, you don't watch the replays if you don't want to see them. I thought he was completely well within his rights. I thought the Andy Madley, the third official, Newcastle fans were screaming and shouting. I thought the Havertz one was a 50-50, possible red. I don't think it was, personally. I think it was a nasty challenge, but I don't think he caught him outright. I don't think it was a red. But Bruno, as you know, guys, one of my favourite players, how he didn't get a red card for that forearm smash on Jorginho. I thought it was one where it didn't look as bad in slow motion. In real time, you can really see the force in which he hit him. How Andy Madley has looked at that and thought, that's fine for Premier League football, okay. But then the goal line technology, we know we can't give. There's a curvature of the ball, which is so annoying, we can't tell. But then the push from Joe Linton, then the even possible offside, I don't see how the goal stood. So And I think Arteta's right. You know, that's the way City and Arsenal are going. It could come down to a point at the end of the season. It really could, and that could be a huge momentum shift there. I think Arteta was right. I think it was disgraceful, and Andy Madley should have to come out and explain himself. How he got? I think he had four VAR decisions that he gave all four to Newcastle. The goal line one, no, but I think he got the other three wrong massively.
Sean Ange came out after the game last night and said people should stop talking about referees because it's a really difficult job for them. What do you think?
I agree. I think Guimaraes could have got sent off. I think that was quite obvious. I think my main problem from the Newcastle game was that the ref, Stuart Atwell, who always seems to find himself in these situations, just had no control over the game whatsoever. It was just this kind of cauldron and he had no way of calming the players down and maintaining order. I think kind of Ange alluded to that. That's what he was talking about when he was in his post-match presser. Where he was like, you know, referees used to be feared. They used to have the control and now they don't. And now it's about a guy sitting in Stockley Park 100 miles away. And that was just the whole feeling from that Newcastle-Arsenal game. I think Arsenal actually got away with a really poor performance that they've kind of been able to, you know, put their hat on. We were aggrieved by VAR and the refs. And I think it probably is a foul on Gabriel as well. So I understand why they're aggrieved. But at the same time, I came away from watching that match thinking, wow, neither side deserve any points here. They should both leave with zero. And Arsenal got away with that. And Arsenal have put in a number of poor performances for several months. And I think this is just kind of masking what's going on. So
I 100% right kind of, on the game. On the game, you're 100% right. When I was sat there and then we saw the first shot on target after 47 minutes, I was like, was that the first shot on target? Yeah, it wasn't a great game.
Very bad. Yeah, so I think Arsenal have been able to kind of deflect away from their own shortcomings with this quite conveniently. I'm not saying there's like a conspiracy or anything, but I just...
I think David Rea being the main one.
Arteta
didn't get a single question about David Rea at the press conference. That's how much he got away with it.
Expertly done by Arteta, you could say. The issue for me is if you're putting out a statement about something that is subjective and not factual, then that's not for me. The Liverpool one, I didn't like the statement really, but I could at least understand it because it was incompetence. These are subjective decisions, and Arsenal have, in my opinion, used it to try and swing an advantage in their direction. But anyway, let's drift back to the winners.
You're going to be a very brave VAR man to give much against Arsenal for the rest of the season, aren't you?
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, I think they know that.
Liverpool got their favour in the next few weeks, didn't they, after the...
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
So I feel like that's calculated. To me, anyway. Chelsea were the beneficiaries of some VAR decisions on Monday night. We've obviously talked about them winning that game 4-1. Nick Jackson isn't on the agenda today, but it's a big talking point from that. I think he had player of the match as well. Graham, we were talking all summer, really, though, about how they wanted to remodel their midfield, and they've signed Enzo Fernandez in January, and they've signed Moises Caicedo, both for over £100 million plus.
And Romeo Lavia
as well, who we haven't seen and I've forgotten about. But there is one player in there that we were talking about potentially leaving Chelsea in the summer. Mm-hmm. Conor Gallagher. He's playing all the time, though. What's the plan?
Yeah, the ball is almost really in Gallagher's court because there's Chelsea saying to him, look, you need to sign this new contract. It's getting towards the same similar situation with Mason Mount. He's out of contract in 2025. So he's got basically 18 months left, Gallagher. And, you know, Chelsea are not going to let players run down the contracts. And they're saying to him now, saying, look, basically, I think Poch alluded to this at his press conference, they're showing an awful lot of faith in Gallagher. Not just handing him the captain's armband, he's getting a lot of playing time even when all his players are available. And they're saying to him now, look, we've shown you like this, where you are in our plans, our thoughts. You're a key member of the squad. And they want him to sign a new deal. It's our understanding that they'll try to accelerate it during the next international break, yet another one, in November, with the hope that it doesn't get to January. You know, they don't want to spend another window seeing being linked to Tottenham, West Ham, etc. If he rejects this new offer, so I'm not sure whether he'd leave in January, but he will end up leaving the club because Chelsea won't put up with it. So they're not agitated, they're not annoyed at this moment in time, but if he rejects this latest round of talks, it'll start to get interesting. But I think he'll sign, he'll commit to Chelsea. Who's going to give him more playing time in Chelsea given him at the moment? He's got captain's armband. He's playing for England, which I think is key as well. You know, it's everything's... I don't see why Gallagher I think he'd be hugely badly advised if he doesn't sign this deal, personally.
Yeah, we'll see how that pans out. We know that we've talked about Newcastle in the past, and obviously they've got a Sandro Tonali-sized hole, but we've addressed their difficulties with FFP in recent episodes, so you know, might be difficult to pull off. But yeah, I would expect that to happen, to be honest. I'd expect him to resign.
Do you think he's looking at the Mason Mount struggles at Old Trafford and thinking it's not always greener on the other side, is it?
Well, if Mason Mount had chosen Liverpool, I think he'd been fine, to be honest.
What did you say? You wished he'd chosen Liverpool?
No, I didn't say that at all. I'm just saying we're only 10 weeks into the season, so things can change. But anyway, let's talk about
it. And one thing as well on FFP, I've been told someone in the game we have to start calling it profit and sustainability rather than FFP, apparently.
So FFP is dead?
Yeah, apparently clubs call it profit and sustainability now.
That's not fun.
No, it's not fun. PNS doesn't work, does it?
PNS.
Yeah, we'll keep going FFP. It's better, isn't it?
PNS it is nowadays. Let's talk about United because you just mentioned them there. We have a lot to get through. We'll
talk about profit and sustainability, Man United. Good nice segue there, Scott.
The absolute not the example of profit and sustainability, really. But Graham, where are we on the takeover? The 25% ownership point, and Jim Ratcliffe is obviously wanting to push this through. There are people that should likely come in with him. Paul Mitchell is tipped or likely to be the new sporting director or of similar title and role. But how far off are we in your view?
They're trying to get it done as soon as they can. As we know, with these multi-million pound deals, Scott, there's a lot of things to be, lots of T's to cross, lots of I's to dot. There's things like, you know, when can Sir Jim make a move for the overall bid and stuff like that. There's lots. This deal is actually, I was told, a bit more convoluted than the overall takeover, because you're having to put in these lots of extracts in the contracts, little bits here, little bits there. When does it kick in? Is there bonus? It's quite complicated. It really is. But they try to get it done as soon as possible. They're hoping to have this new football department in by January, Scott, which will be Sir Dave Brailsford, who's sort of going to be, he's already, from my understanding, our understanding, Scott, isn't it? He's already looking into this. He's doing not investigating, but he's seeing what the issues are so that they can hit the ground running when they come in. You know, we expect Jean-Claude Blanc to come in, maybe in the chief executive sort of role, a bit more commercial, but some with a sporting knowledge. He's already at Ineos, the former PSG man. And I say Paul Mitchell is currently the sporting director-elect, really. He knows Sir Jim. I think Sir Jim trusts him. And then Sir Jim will be a part of this as well. They're not quite ready to go with that, but I think they are making plans. They're doing as much as they can. It's like when you don't really own a house, how much work can you do on it? It's like, so they're getting stuff ready. They're starting to be doing bits and pieces. They're hoping, from what date we're on now, by Christmas is what I'm told, they're hoping that at the very least they'll be on the ground. And he also will be in at Old Trafford running the football department. Maybe not the appointments by that point, but hope to be in there. So Christmas, New Year, that's what we're looking at for this to be really active, Scott. But I think in the build up to that, we will see other things coming about.
So there we have that. It would be nice. Well, I say nice. It's gone on way too long, but November 22nd, it would be a year to the day, and we're just a couple of weeks away from that. So, you know, fingers crossed it's done soon, because I'm absolutely sick to death of it. Don't know about you guys. But yeah, let's talk about transfers, because United love transfers, don't they? Monaco is Paul Mitchell's former stomping ground, hunting ground, potentially in this case. Although, Graham, there are two players on their agenda, as we've reported on 90min.com, as you're listening to this, that not necessarily driven by Paul Mitchell, but are on United's transfer target list anyway. At least there's some interest there, let's say.
Yeah, these two players that have been anyway, we're talking Youssef Fofana and Vanderson. Vanderson, who is someone who actually Sean, ironically, the third member of this team today, has written a lot about.
Favorites.
Yeah, Vanderson, who has come on leaps and bounds. So fair play to the guys at Brentford who did spot him initially. I'm sure that's no comfort to them that they spotted Vanderson and almost got him before Monaco and Paul Mitchell swooped in to get him. Vanderson now regarded, I speak to a lot of scouts in Europe, he's the right back in Europe at the moment. He's flavour of the month. He's on Real Madrid's list. He is on Manchester United's list. Manchester United have got an interesting few decisions to make. Anthony Martial, obviously, we probably know that one isn't happening, Scott, in terms of the options. Lindelof and Wan-Bissaka are really interesting. You know, do you take up Wan-Bissaka's year option? To what end? No one's going to buy him anyway, so what's the point in keeping him? What value is sustaining there? I think that's the conversation that United are having, and this football department will as well. And I think I wouldn't be surprised, and it seems this way, that the move for a right back, you know, Dallow's under contract, but they do need another right back. It's no surprise to me that Vanderson is in United's sights. You know, it won't be easy to get him, but, you know, with Paul Mitchell's contacts, a gym in Monte Carlo, that's where he's based, it'd be interesting. And the other one is Youssef Fofana, a wonderful midfielder, Scott. I really like Fofana. He was one who West Ham looked at closely. He's technically out of contract in the summer, but I believe the option's already basically been told that it's happening. So, yeah, midfield, again, still not started in midfield, Scott. You know only too well. It's an interesting one, and obviously, does that impact on the future of others there? And we're not thinking McTominay, et cetera, Scott. We're thinking more Casemiro, maybe.
Well, let's talk about that, because obviously it worked last season. But I think everybody knew that at some point, probably quite soon, we'd come to the point where that deal would have looked a little bit erratic. I mean, I think I was one of the people criticising it at the time. They've panicked again. And ultimately, the panic did... it was fixed short term. But we come to a point now where you've put Casemiro on one of the biggest wages at the club. Real Madrid have completely revamped their entire midfield with a bunch of 21, 20, 19-year-olds, and they're fixed for 10, 15 years now if they keep all those players. Sean, do you think Casemiro is done?
I'm hesitant when it comes to players that are that good. And he was that good last season. He actually was pretty decent. But I can't remember if I've said this on here before. But I think I was on annual leave at the time that United first swooped in for Casemiro and then signed him. I didn't realise until 6-7 months down the line that he went for 70 mil in that range. I always thought it was a cut price deal. And that was why United were able to get him. I didn't realise that was such a huge outlay. And now it really does make you wince. It's like, ooh, for one season, you know. And then you got to buy another one. You know, the whole thing was, for years, it's been United have a lot of midfielders who can play as number 8, but not really as number 6. And now you kind of need another one. So I wouldn't write off Casemiro, but maybe wrap him in cotton wool, but maybe break glass in case of an emergency stage of his career.
Well, Casemiro is, I think he's only 31-ish or whatever. So technically he shouldn't be right at the end. But Graham, there is a... we'll talk about Casemiro first, really, because we're talking about Fofana there, and you beg the question. It begs the question, really, like, do you really need another defensive midfielder if you've got Casemiro and Amrabat, who is only in on loan currently, but and it's not going, he's not exactly started brilliantly either. But why would they be looking at another person in that position? Does that suggest that maybe Casemiro is going to leave at some point?
Yeah, it's our information, Scott. I think he is of interest to the Saudi Pro League, and you know, we talked off pod, you know, it's one of those deals where I'm told United are not shopping him around, but suddenly if someone in the Pro League comes into United and says, there's your money back and we'll take his contract. It's a bit like the Fabinho and Henderson situations at Liverpool. You know, they weren't shopping them around, but when someone comes and puts them those sort of deals on the table, it's going to be very hard to refuse. So I think that's where we are with Casemiro. And he turns, 32 in February, I think he does. So it's an interesting one. I think if the Pro League come in January and we know they do like him, I think, especially with if Mitchell is in place by that point or someone of his ilk, they're not turning down that deal.
Well, Graham, we already know the United are on the profit and sustainability tightrope. So getting their money back for a player like that, especially if it's 70-odd million, that is absolutely massive money.
It's huge. And I think to wipe your feet on a player that you play, that you overpass, as Sean said, you really did overpay for him. And it's not just the over. It's it's the size of his contract as well, Scott. The overall deal is massive, overpaid in every which way. So, yeah, we're seeing a lot of links, like Sir Varane, who I'm told doesn't particularly want to move to Saudi at this point in time. And obviously, we're seeing the Martial link. But Casemiro really is an interesting one. I think that would be a real, I think, a statement sale, if that's a term. You know, I think moving on from him would be saying, look, thanks for everything we've done, but we need to restart the rebuild. And I think the rebuild does need to come in the midfield. It sounds strange when you spent so much money in the last 18 months on the midfield. But
well, Graham, it's not quite United right. United's balance in the midfield. You look at Chelsea now, they've just spent 100 million on Moises Caicedo, who can do everything. Arsenal spent 100 million on Declan Rice, who can do everything. And United have a bunch of players who either are technically quite good, like Christian Eriksen, who can't run, or you have players who can't run who aren't technically that good. So, like, there's not really one player in there. Maybe outside of, I think they're drawing a pathway for Kobe Manu, who we'll talk about in a second. And I think he needs to be evolved into this team to see if he's good enough to do it. But the balance isn't there, really, is it?
No, and that's the whole point of a Mitchell or someone of his ilk, is that you're bringing someone in to then find these gems abroad. And obviously, when we say Fofana in terms of being a bargain, yeah, he's only going to be 30, 40 million, but that's the market that you might have to go down rather than... And to be fair, United should start looking at that market. They're spending more than that on most players, and most of them are not being successful. So why not... You need to build a player up, and if you are going to go down that avenue, someone like Mitchell is the ideal man to oversee that. So, but yeah, if you were going to go for someone like Fofana, he's a gem. He's a fantastic young player.
I'll send you the list of Paul Mitchell signings at Spurs later, Scott. That'll give you a laugh.
He did sign Son, though. Didn't he?
He did sign Son. That was his crowning glory, really.
He didn't sign Fofana. He's actually Fofana arrived a few months before his time at Monaco, but he did sign Vanderson, Paul Mitchell.
Mm-hmm. Sean, just going back to the midfield, even the example of Tottenham have been top of the league, but even the example of Tottenham's midfield currently, you have Pap Sarr and you have Bissouma, who are really prototypes of what you need in your midfield nowadays in terms of energy, technical ability, intelligence, this kind of thing. And United don't have any of them, you know?
And Spurs didn't spend a lot on that midfield either. You think so? Basuma's 25 mil. I think Sarr was around quite cheap as well. Madison himself, you know, that was the marquee signing. Even that was 40 mil. So there's value for money there.
You don't necessarily need to spend 100 million every single time.
Nope.
If you can search in the right places. But Graham, let's just revert back to Saudi. We'll do Saudi first, because Bruno Fernandes, Graham, captain. Criticised often, sometimes, well, most of the time, rightly so, I would say. Is he on the agenda for Saudi Arabia as well?
Yeah, he is, Scott. He's, from our, again, understanding, there's strong Portuguese links with Saudi. You know, Cristiano set the blaze the path for everyone to Saudi. And what is Bruno? Is he 29 now, Scott, Bruno? Which I was staggered at. I didn't realise he was that old, but everyone, obviously, that was part of the question marks of United signing. He wasn't 25, 26 before he left Sporting, wasn't he? And you know, Casemiro and Bruno, if you're building for the future, talking about both of them in one go, it does make some sense. You know, Bruno is one of the worst Manchester United captains I've ever seen. I don't know whether I'm just a bad luck charm. Whenever I've seen him live about at least half a dozen times, always in big games. He's awful. He's dreadful. If he put as much effort into arguing with the officials as he does in the game, he'd be much better off. But it's weird, because then by the same argument, the same player for Portugal, he looks a different player. But I've always thought he was not quite that level for United captain, especially. Yeah, for me, so do you know what? I think if I were, and I'm not what I'm hearing, but my gut feeling is there might be a bit of a clearing of the house at Old Trafford. And it's not just literally cleaning the gutters out, but I think it may, some of these key players, like a Bruno, like a Casemiro, yeah, Sancho, let's move on.
Well, Graham, I said on another podcast this morning that I would prefer to see every player leave before the manager currently, because I'm absolutely sick of it. Like, I'm not saying that Ten Hag is faultless at all.
That's how we're understanding, isn't it, with Sir Jim? We've been told, Scott, all along from sources, we've been told that Sir Jim likes the Ten Hag approach. He's not going to interfere that much, but he will be giving his opinions. And we think it is along the lines of what you're saying, Scott.
I can imagine Sean is having a little chuckle at that in his mind. But
I'm very critical of Ten Hag, but I agree that he should at least have the season without kind of question.
Yeah. And he is, like, I think for me that there are issues with things like United's wage structure, the profiles of players that they've been buying for 10 years, this kind of thing, that inevitably lead to every manager failing because the players are often bigger than the manager is. They are. And they feel like their profile is bigger and that they warrant and they're able to outstay managers, this kind of thing. And unfortunately, that needs to be addressed. And if it's a Ratcliffe, Blanc, Mitchell-driven decision where they do remove the manager, then and it's to correct an overall culture and start again, then I've not really got an issue with that. But at the same time, currently, what are you going to do? Sack another manager and go through the same phase you've gone through five times before? Anyway, let's talk about Kobe. Graham, there was some links with Man City the other day. Yeah. Man United's not golden, maybe golden boy, new golden boy, potentially. A lot of hype around him, a lot of hope. Does seem to, if he can potentially develop, he might be the prototype midfielder that I've just talked about United not having. There's a lot of pressure to put on them, but people talk highly about him. And I think he would have played a lot this season if he wasn't injured, but Man City wanted him, Graham.
Yeah, to be fair to both clubs, they both played this down. I think, don't get me wrong, if United made Manu available, Man City would be knocking the door down. But, you know, this is a player City have literally tried to sign since he was 9 years old. He's never shown any willingness to move across to the City. Luckily for United, he's been committed to the club and always will be. You know, it's one of those where City, yeah, of course we like him, and if he was available, we would. But we haven't made any efforts behind the scenes. It was a bit of a mystery as to which clubs where this came from. And I understand the player as well. He's more than happy at United. There's not much into this. Yes, technically, City do like him and would sign him, but he's not moving.
One more topic on United. Todibo from Nice. They want him in the summer. Naturally, that one's going to come up again because of who's looking to take over the sporting operation. He plays for Nice. Jim Ratcliffe owns Nice. 2 and 2 equals Todibo. Graham.
It's a nice link, isn't it? Yeah, but the problem is, I don't think Ratcliffe would want that. I don't think there's any chance of maybe Nice could becoming a feeder club. I'm not sure that, or a sister club as it would be in the multi-club ownership world that we're in. But the problem that Todibo has got, any chance that he's got to move in January, are going to be scuppered by the fact Nice are top of Ligue 1 at the moment. Remarkably, wonderful.
Jim Ratcliffe has no idea what he's doing.
Yeah, we're, you know, they're a very defensive unit. You know, only 4 goals conceded all season. Remarkable effort so far from Nice. So basically, Nice is saying, look, to Todibo, you can go in 2024, but if we're in Champions League contention, we're not going to sell you in January, which goes for all the Nice players who are performing well, but Todibo being the main one. And would United be looking at a centre-half in January? I'm not so sure, Scott. And even if he didn't take up Lindelof's option, I don't think a centre-half in January with Evans in there as well. I don't think, not that it isn't needed, because obviously Todibo would come in and be great. However, I think it's one for the summer, and Nice, as it stands, have told him, you can go, but not until the summer.
We talked about Antonio Silva in the past, and there's Scalvini links over the last few days as well, which, you know, these kinds of players. But yeah, let's, I'm done with talking about United. Let's move on to City. Florian Wirtz is the latest name on their agenda, according to 90min.com, Graham.
Yeah, he's not the latest. Now, we've written about Wirtz.
Well, it just so happens to be that he's...
They went over and watched him, Scott. I presume they weren't watching Wout Weghorst, not to mention our little competition there. They'll have seen the Wout Weghorst goal, which is quite unusual. The Man City scouts who were in attendance at the Hoffenheim game, they saw Leverkusen win 3-2. wonderful team to watch. I'm surprised then that everyone's watching Zabulonto's team at the minute. They're doing so well. Wirtz was on target in that game. He's a player we know that, that Pep Guardiola loves. He had that injury, was it 18 months ago, the big injury he had? And so the bit they were falling before that, seeing his recovery from injury. He's now one of the best players in the Bundesliga again. And yeah, keep an eye on Wirtz. I think he's a perfect player for City. We've seen that they want this type of someone who can play all over number 10 a little bit. So Lucas Paqueta type thing. So it's no surprise we're watching him at the weekend. And we do know Wirtz was the main reason for their attendance. But obviously when you're watching Bayer Leverkusen, there's an awful lot of players in that team who you will also be paying attention to. But Wirtz was the main point of interest for City when they were in Hoffenheim.
City always got their fingers on the pulse, looking at, you know, the next hot prospect to come out of whichever league it is, really. Jeremy Doku is the latest one who... Sean, he's never really had massive numbers, has he, behind like goals and assist numbers. And that's been a criticism of him. But then he goes and he scored one and assist four against Bournemouth. It's a good start.
Yeah, I think the other thing as well, he has quite a bad injury record. So I think City probably saw it as worth a pump because I was talking earlier about the kind of attacking options that you can just rotate. You know, Pep Guardiola is the king of that, FPL roulette and all that stuff. So
worst weekend in FPL I've ever had.
Yeah,
imagine how many people are buying. Imagine how many people
the weekends.
How many people are buying Doku this week? I haven't looked at the stats, but I imagine he is, because I saw a horrific stat that Nketiah was the most signed player after his hat trick against Sheffield United. But I imagine Doku is the most.
Just wait for him to be on the bench at Chelsea. Don't worry, he'll be on the bench probably. Anyway,
sorry, Sean. No, just saying that's the kind you need like loads of attacking options, and that is. It's fine. They don't have to run him into the ground. It gives Grealish a bit of time off because can we debate this? Because I got quite a bit of pushback on this the other day. I still don't believe that Grealish was worth the 100 mil that City paid. And people come back to me like, yeah, the trouble they won was so not worth it. It's like, that's not the point. They could have, like, anyone could have, they could have signed some 20 mil winger and done what Grealish did last season.
I agree with you. I think.
I don't agree with that necessarily. I think Grealish played did a role. I think, yeah, 100, who is worth 100 million these days? You know what I mean? It's one of those. I think Grealish was a good signing. I think he fitted that squad. I think he helped massively. Yeah, I wouldn't say he was worth 100, but I think he was a worthwhile signing. I think Doku was an interesting one because I've been hypercritical of City selling Mahrez. I thought that was a huge mistake. But I think it's the first time at the weekend where we're saying, yeah, actually, Doku could replace Mahrez. I didn't think he could until now. So more evidence that Pep knows more than me.
No, I see where you're coming from there, Sean. But the unfortunately, City win all the time. So it's not really that much of an issue, really, is it? You can put a 100 million player on the bench knowing that you're going to win the treble anyway.
City are doing all this without their best player, which is frightening.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Great news.
Fair play to Manchester City. Fair play. Anyway, let's move on. Last topic of the show. Alphonso Davies is wanted by Real Madrid, Graham. And we've talked about Vanderson wanted by Madrid already for the right side, one of the names. But is Alphonso Davies the name for their left side?
Yeah, you know, we're getting used to these type of deals now that Real Madrid are becoming very good at. You know, Perez, he learned a lot off Sir Alex Ferguson in terms of building that colossus of a club and the way they act on and off the pitch. They've been lining up Davies, as our understanding, for quite a while now, and they've targeted him for next summer. And Bayern Munich think this is... They're not quite in PSG territory of accusing them of anything, but they suspect that this deal, not agreed or anything, but they suspect that Davies knows that Madrid are coming for him in the summer. He'll only have a year left on his contract at Bayern by that point. So perfect manoeuvring by Real. And yeah, obviously a squad like Real, desperately in need of additions, but Alphonso Davies will fit into that team like a hand in a glove. Can you imagine that team? Amazing. But already getting Endrick next summer, who is blowing up the Brazilian league at the minute. He's performing brilliantly.
Just got a Brazil call up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did he? Brilliant.
Yeah, and then, Pollock.
And then they might just sign a little free agent like Mbappe in the summer as well. So if we get Davis, Mbappe and Endrick, wouldn't be a bad little summer, would it?
Vanderson, Antonio Silva, potentially.
Well, I think they think Danny Carvajal, who's apparently he's on a gluten-free diet now, and his fitness is better than it's ever been. They think they can get at least another year out of him. So I think a right back might be one for the January after or the summer after, or if Vanderson comes up, they might have to do it. But they know what they're doing, you know, Madrid, they really do. And I think the Davis will come in for. It won't cost an awful lot of money to get Davis next summer, but you can imagine him in that side and just talk of Valverde being converted to a wing back and stuff. And it's a mouth-watering prospect.
That's it for us, I think. Get in touch with us on social media at @_ScottSaunders, @GrahamBailey, and @SeanDZWalsh. This has been Talking Transfers. And subscribe on all your major podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, I believe, is the other one. Nightyman.com.
Not Google, Scott. Google are cancelling their podcast, aren't they? They're coming out the market. I'm sure I did an email about that the other day. Yeah, Google Podcasts. I will apologise and correct myself in next edition. That's true, but Google are no longer going to be doing podcasts from next year, I think.
Well, until next year, you can get us on Google Podcasts. But you might need to change your provider. Spotify and Apple are the ones that I use. So maybe follow suit. Nightyman.com for all the latest from us. Nightyman.com/talkingtransfers for all the latest transfer news. And @Nightyman_football for everything that we do. Give us a follow on all those. Thanks to Graham. And thanks to Sean for today's show. That's a wrap from us. I've been Scott. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon for another Talking Transfers.